This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Frances Fanny Trollope was the mother of the Victorian novelist Anthony Trollope. She's probably best known today for writing the book Domestic Manners of the Americans, which was first published in 1832. The book provides an account of her travels in the United States, along with her observations on our life and culture. And she spent some time in Cincinnati, and her opinion of the city and its residents was less than flattering. And joining us for a look at Fanny Trollope and her thoughts on America and Cincinnati, our Public Library of Cincinnati and Hamilton County Reference Librarian Jim Manger, Casey Costin, who's Vice President of Urban Expansion and a Soapbox Media contributor. And Casey recently wrote about Fanny Trollope's time in Cincinnati for Soapbox Media. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Casey and Jim, thank you both for being here this afternoon.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Casey, I have to admit, I had never heard of Frances Trollope until I read your story in Soapbox. And I'm kind of curious, what got you thinking about Frances Trollope and prompted you to write an article about her?
Well, it's been a story that I've known for a while. I think I first read about it in the 1946 WPA Writer's Guide. And it was such an interesting story, and I thought it'd be great. And I was surprised how many people did not know it. And a few weeks back, I was in the Women's March in going down Central Parkway right by your studio here, and I was sort of reflecting on illustrious women in Cincinnati history, and I was like, why hasn't anyone really written the story of Old Madam Vinegar, Fanny Trollope? And as it happens, we are on the February 10th is the 189th anniversary of her first arrival upon our fair shores here in Cincinnati.
Why? And that's interesting. Why was she called Old Madam Vinegar? Where did that come from?
Well, she had some very negative opinions about Americans in general.
Oh, okay.
About their as her title of her book suggests, manners. She was very much acutely annoyed by American manners and compared them very unfavorably to British manners or to the manners of what she regarded as very polite society. She was English and she was of the gentry class. And she expected things to be a particular way, and Americans did not meet that expectation at all.
Yeah, she was I mean, if you read it now, it seems rather tame, the criticism, compared to today's standards. But I think that America now more than ever could always use a lesson in domestic manners. And she found that – she really found Cincinnatians to be – really uncouth, but she really hated the incessant handshaking upon greeting, and also the what she called violent intimacy of, say, neighbors showing up at her house unannounced and things like that.
So people being overly friendly, she didn't particularly like that.
No. And this is a woman who arrived here with who really had a hard time cracking what was then the 20,000 population frontier town of Cincinnati, and she had no letters of introduction as one might have in those days. And had I think she had requested them. Lafayette sent them, but they arrived too late to really help her. And she never really had an entree into Cincinnati society, as it were.
Jim, can you tell us a little bit more about her background, who she was in particular?
She was the daughter of a English clergyman, Anglican clergyman. She grew up in the vicinity of London. She married a gentleman named Thomas Trollope, who was an attorney, not a very successful attorney, it turned out. And they had seven children. One died in childbirth, and I think the other two died later on in their lives. So she was a mother. She had those experiences. What happened was they were expecting an inheritance from a relative of, I don't know if it was hers or his.
Uncle. I think it was his uncle.
His uncle. And that the uncle was an older man, and for some reason he went and got married to a younger woman and had it produced an heir. So that expectation went right down the tubes. So they had actually built up a big estate on credit, expecting that they would be remunerated, and that did not happen. So they were in financial trouble in the 1820s, and that financial trouble actually was probably the main impetus for them to come to the United States, because they were looking for the possibility of economic opportunity.
Right. He had his law practice was flailing, to put it mildly. And this is, it's such an interesting story. This could be.
If I understand, Casey, he stayed back in England.
He stayed back. He came over for a visit.
Okay.
And then, but she was 49 years old when she arrived here. You know, this is with three of her six children and her Auguste Hervé, which was the their art teacher, who was exiled from monarchist France. And this just odd, these kids, the French tutor and this 49-year-old woman who lost her inheritance, looking to strike it big in the U.S. And some have suggested that she had this idea all along to write her travelogue some sort of travelogue, which at the time was pretty popular, and maybe make some success out of that, which eventually she did.
How unusual was it back then for a woman and her kids to travel without the husband? Was that one of the things that was looked upon as?
No, it was not looked on very favorably at all. Everyone was looking behind her at that Frenchman and wondering what the heck
is he
doing there. And they were very suspicious of their relationship.
Yes, it was never confirmed. So they first went, they arrived in New Orleans and went up the Mississippi to go to a utopian colony outside of Memphis called Neshoba. And she had heard about it from a reformer, Francis Wright, at a lecture over tea, and thought this sounded splendid and a great place to bring half of her, three of her children at least, and their art teacher. And when she got there, they found a mass of log cabins and stumps, and basically hightailed it to this booming frontier town of Cincinnati in 1828.
So what was her first impression that she got? I mean, she goes to visit this utopian colony. And she's disappointed in that. What was the first impression she got there? Was it transportation that her first experience?
Right. She had she was immediately upon arriving on our shores in America, she was on a riverboat heading north, and found the means of transport utterly despicable, basically. And she'd rather be sharing a room with a pig, I think, was her comment, rather than that. And then she ironically comes to Cincinnati and has to deal with pigs everywhere she goes, which just goes downhill from there.
One of the things going on the riverboat, which she found throughout her trip in America, was men spitting, chewing tobacco, spitting, smelling, reeking of whiskey. There's a practice of separating the men and the women. Like, the men would be in their own cabin and the women would socialize in their other cabin, which was very different from what she had experienced in England and in other places in Europe that she was visited. So she was rather just thought that was really horrible, and she thought the mannerisms of spitting and whatever were really revolting. She also ridiculed the tendency of American men to give themselves titles, like military titles, mm-hmm. for example. They'd all be colonels or majors or something like that. They all were, you know, in her opinion. They all took on these titles as a way of pretension in her viewpoint. She very despised the American concept of equality, and she thought it was hypocritical, because she saw so many instances of you know, the money classes kind
right.
of controlling everything.
And she was hypocrite. I mean, if you really read her stuff closely, she really was just a base hypocrite herself.
Of course.
Because she would sort of condemn Americans for the male and female roles and also slavery, because she was an abolitionist. But then she would sort of, and then the other instance, would long for the proper servant to be serving her,
yes.
and mm-hmm. you know, and was upset that there wasn't a tea being served at her hotel or things like that.
Or the Americans who served her were very surly and disrespectful to her class status.
But she hasn't run into the incessant handshaking yet that she's going to face in Cincinnati.
Right. that and the pigs. She first moved her family into a place on Ray Street downtown, and was outraged when she asked what to do with, say, trash and things. They were like, go put it out in the middle of the street and the pigs will eat it. So she couldn't live there and moved to is at the corner of Dunlop and McMicken now, across the street from, I think, a spray ground and a water slide today. But back then was just the countryside. And I'm told that she was the first one to call it Mohawk, or Mohawk Hill, Mohawk Village. And she had a little house there called Gano Lodge, and sort of lived out there in the country away from the really uncouth people down in the center city.
If individuals know Cincinnati history, Daniel Gano was a fairly important pioneer settler of the city, and that was his summer lodge, which he rented to her. And it was a nice little location outside of the main city. So it was. She found that a very comfortable.
I think it's a village, Gano, that's just a little north of Sharonville. Is that?
No. We're talking something much closer.
Okay.
Mohawk-Brighton area.
Mohawk-Brighton,
yeah,
okay.
Northern over the Rhine, really.
Yeah.
And so that was considered out in the countryside. And although she did have the instances of the people dropping in unannounced, like neighbors, to shake hands and bother her at her home.
Why did she end up in Cincinnati? I mean, what brought her here?
Well, I think she saw a booming frontier town and thought she would make her bones and gets it was all about getting money and mm-hmm. sort of restoring the family coffers mm-hmm. to where they could afford their mansion back home.
So it's the same reason she came to the United States
exactly.
in the first place.
She was looking for the economic opportunity, and she did not see that at any point, like. Further down in the
right.
South, for example.
And she was like she was only here for 3 years, tops. I mean, it was this comet of criticism and sensationalism, basically, that she kind of rode back to England on and wrote a book. And yeah. It really was her success.
She tried to make a living here in Cincinnati for about 2 years, and that failed. The things that she tried to do were she was involved in what was in the Western Museum, which was an early sort of a natural history museum in Cincinnati, started by Daniel Drake. And she, her involvement, which she does not talk about in her book, nor her other involvement with the Trollope's Bazaar, but mm-hmm. she talks about she was involved in creating a drama at this Western Museum to make it more interesting to the public, just as, you know, there's this conflict between you have something that's too scientific and cultural or educational versus something entertaining.
So she noticed that people aren't interested in it. They're kind of bored by it. So she decides to spice it up. Is that what she
exactly,
does?
Exactly,
yes. Sensationalism, really.
She did, yes.
So what'd she do?
She created – the first thing she did was she created this thing called the Invisible Girl, which was this invisible voice oracle that would come out of from the blue. It was actually her son, Henry, who was, about 17 or 18 years old. He knew some Latin, some Greek, and some French, so he would make these mysterious utterances echo through the room. And Hervieu actually was the one. He was involved in all of this. He would draw these sets and whatever, very elaborate. Once she had done that and it was somewhat successful and she was drawing an audience, she started doing what would kind of be like a hell house or a haunted house nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
It was called The Infernal Regions. It was based on her readings of Dante, which she was a major fan.
Dante's Inferno?
Dante's Inferno. Her interpretation of the Latin, and which she then embellished, I think, quite a bit. And she enlisted Auguste and
Auguste was the gentleman who was traveling with her.
Right. Okay. Yes. Everyone travels with a French artist.
Right.
That's right.
Okay.
And also the sculptor Hiram Powers, who went on to be quite famous, was relatively unknown at the time. And so she did this Dante's Divine Comedy Circles of Hell exhibit, and it saved the museum. And it actually ran for 25 years. This wax museum sculpted ensemble. Diorama, whatever it would be.
Did she make any money from that effort?
Probably not much.
So what did she do to sustain herself financially?
Well, Trollope's Bazaar.
Yes.
Trollope's Bazaar, okay.
Well, that was more of a money loser for the most part. Trollope's Bazaar was a kind of what you would call a early conception of a department store. She built this rather bizarre four-storied structure with arabesque styling, a Turkish-style dome on top, columns, very elaborate, very bizarre, oriental-looking structure.
And we've got to make sure when we say bizarre, it was B-A-Z-A-A-R was the
correct
name of the business, but it was bizarre.
It was bizarre, yes.
I mean, it was this, she thought Cincinnati needed more domes and turrets, so she went right away putting a dome and a turret up at 3rd and Broadway, basically.
She was kind of there's something in London called the Egyptian Hall, who was built by a man named William Bullock. And actually, Bullock moved to the Cincinnati area. He met up with her at that point. But she kind of modeled it somewhat after those kind of Egyptian – they were very popular in Britain at that time, that type of thing. But it wasn't as common to see in the United States at that time. So she was trying to introduce this modicum of culture to the backward United States.
The uncivilized heathens of Cincinnati.
Yes.
they said that she was the first building in Cincinnati to have gas lighting. But the locals complained that it smelled of rotten eggs, and she switched out to oil. But she would also, it was this department store, and she would have her husband buy a lot of cheap European goods and tchotchkes along with local goods that she would then mark up highly inflationary prices on. And the locals knew that they could get this stuff cheaper elsewhere and basically did. She went bankrupt. Mm-hmm. All the assets were seized, and it really soured her on Cincinnati in general.
How unusual was it back then for a woman to create these businesses and these ventures like she was doing, having to deal with bankers and getting funding and that kind of thing?
I think for an American woman, it would have been unheard of. Mm-hmm. I think less so for a European woman. I think she probably grew up with a stronger sense of her own abilities and sense of freedom to operate when she was in Britain. So, but she was unusual even for a European or an English woman at that time. I think in terms of her energy and her, desire to put herself out there.
She would have stories of, she would go for hikes in the hills. You know, I know one I relayed was clearly, I think she was going to Mount Adams, but she had to cross a stream, which I think was Deer Creek, over on by Eggleston, that was run red with pig's blood. And she was, of course, that was a horrible thing as they were trying to get to this Xanadu on the hill. And another time she went out back behind the lodge and got lost and, had this adventure where I think she ended up in what is probably modern day Mount Auburn or something. But in those days, it was like, she disappeared on a mountain climb.
So she goes back to England and she writes her book. And actually, her whole experience, as bad as it was for her in the United States, is actually what saves her financially, if I understand her story right.
Yeah, yeah that's a great story. It should be a movie.
I think you noted in your article it should be a BBC series. Casey, even though she's only here for a short time, she's only in Cincinnati for a short time, you argue that she should have a spot with other local female icons like Annie Oakley, Harriet Beecher Stowe, for example.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there are similarities with Harriet Beecher Stowe in that she went on to write Uncle Tom's Cabin after she left Cincinnati, but it was sort of her experience here that really sort of gave her the foundation for it. And then the other thing about Old Madam Vinegar is that, like, her criticism of Cincinnati for lacking in things like the arts really, some would argue, maybe led to us having such a wealth of institutions and cultural institutions that, where we far outpunch our weight class for cities of our size.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Her book was quite a sensation in the United States in general because everyone bought it and talked about
it.
Cincinnati, it really, really had an impact in terms of people were offended, people were embarrassed. And I think Casey's right that there was a stimulus after that. People felt a little bit, maybe we should improve our manners and our cultural outlook here.
Right. So do you think that she should be among the local female icons too?
I think there's something to that. I think in some ways she has been known about for the last 160 some years, but I think I think that there is something to say about her being important for the city. She was an important critic of social evils, you know, slavery. And later on, she wrote a lot of novels that were based on social criticism, social reform, you know, child labor, the unequal status of men and women, that kind of thing. So she kind of was an early feminist in a certain way and an early reformer. So I think she has those positive aspects as well.
Yeah, I'm just still curious why she's so unknown, why she's such an unknown person in our city's history.
Well, we talked about that a little bit. I mean, it may be because it's that part of our city's history. 1828 is really going back there. You know, I mean, when we talk about popular Cincinnati, sort of, if you want to romanticize our history, sort of the mid-century to late 19th century is really like the heyday. I mean, it's – so 1828, we were still kind of a frontier town. Mm-hmm. With our frontier pigs in the street. And so maybe it's a little overlooked. But, I mean, 189 years ago, 5 days ago, she arrived at Public Landing, you know, with probably a trunk and a servant, three children, and a French art teacher. And Cincinnati will never be the same.
Jim, does the library have resources, books, those kinds of things that people can check out about Frances Trollope? And particularly, they have the book, Domestic Manners of the Americans?
Certainly. Yeah, the book itself. I borrowed the Penguin edition of it, and with a wonderful introduction by Pamela Neville Singleton, who is her primary biographer. We also have that biography by her as well. There are other resources, too. And in addition, our rare book collection in our Cincinnati room has the original British edition of her book and also the original American edition. So I actually went and looked at those. You can't check those out. You have to view them there.
but you can see them there.
You can see them there. You can see the original illustrations by Auguste Hervieux, who actually contributed – stayed with her back to England and contributed with...
Did the kids go back to England too?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, she ended up living with her son in her dying years in Florence, I think, in a villa.
Yes, exactly. Right.
Okay.
No, she was the center of a lot of society, British expatriates coming to Italy to hang out with her and, you know, people like Dickens and...
It had an influence, arguably.
Casey and Jim, thank you. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Public Library of Cincinnati and Hamilton County Reference Librarian Jim Manger, and Casey Costin, Vice President of Urban Expansion and a Soapbox Media contributor. Casey recently wrote about Fanny Trollope's time in Cincinnati for Soapbox Media, and you can find a link to that story at wvxu.org. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.